Welcome back. Well, with South Africa's changing political, economic and social landscape, where will the country be in 2030? Multi-stakeholder and research-driven Indlula Miti has launched three possible scenarios, namely an enclave bourgeois nation, a nation in step with itself, and a floundering false dawn. Andile Sankhu, who's executive head of Anglo-American, and Lumkile Mwandi, senior lecturer at the Wits School of Economics and Business Science, join us in studio now to discuss where the country is likely to be in 2030. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining me in studio today. And perhaps let's start off with you, Andile, because being plotted out, as I've highlighted, three scenarios which look to answer the question, where will South Africa be in 2030? Where do you even start when trying to plot down, you know, plot out a scenario that far down the timeline? What informs the development of the various storylines?
So where we started with this process was that, of course, it started with a vision where few people really felt that we needed to think and lift our gaze beyond the current crisis that is facing us. So we identified a group of about 200 people that we then interviewed, and we asked them the questions, what it is that was bothering them, that was keeping them up at night awake. And then through that process, we were able to develop through a series of interviews involving the youth, women, just across segments of society, business, civil organizations. And we came up with about 25 variables. And these variables, we then wanted to test the robustness of them. And through the process of doing that, we then commissioned researchers that put together some papers, and we had a two-day research conference where we debated and we firmed up on the validity of these variables.
Okay, I want to drill down into the scenarios because we don't have a lot of time and we've got three to get through. Let's start off, Lumkile, with an enclave bourgeois nation. That's a scenario one. So outline what exactly we're looking at there, because there are quite a few red flags that point to a scenario like this actually emerging.
In fact, on that scenario, there is no tumamina, to use today's terms. Basically, what happens is that there's no social cohesion. Mm-hmm. The elite lives in boomed communities, and the poor lived in their marginalized communities. It's difficult for you as a bourgeoisie to get to work because N1, N2, N3, they're all blocked. There's mass protests because people are angry. They're being marginalized by society. But the elite has got choices to get to work. So these elite can fly by helicopter to work to avoid everything. They continue using IT and other fourth industrial revolution gadget to get by. So it's really a society that's ripped apart, but everyone is on his or her own cocoon. And this is a scenario that in fact has played in some parts of the world where you've seen just continuous marginalization where people use helicopters to get to work. That scenario played itself in Brazil in the 90s, where in Sao Paulo, for example, if you look in the buildings, they all have landing facilities.
The helipads.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a look at one of the aspects, because something that caught me within that scenario, Andile, is the fact that there's further erosion of trust in key societal institutions, even though many of those institutions improve their capacity and competence. And I mean, glaring at us right now is the likes of an institution like ESCOM.
Yeah. Look, I think in those scenarios, particularly the first one, is that those that can afford not to secure their public services from government will opt out. Mm. So they will be off the grid. Everything will be privatized, from health, from education, security services, even water. So what happens then, it weakens even the efficacy of those public institutions to deliver service for the country as a whole.
Yeah.
So it becomes a situation of only those that can afford, you know, will be able to have access to the services.
Okay,
to
so from
services.
from that extreme, let's go to the other, because scenario two seems pretty idealistic, certainly something that one would assume takes a whole lot longer than a decade to achieve, and we're looking at a nation in step with itself.
Yeah, I think it can be done. First of all, we need to create a space for everybody to be engaged.
Yes.
So I think that is the starting point. So the idea of ushering in or delivering on scenario two is not the responsibility of government alone. It's a collective responsibility and the collective imagination and unleashing our own power and spirit to construct that scenario. Mm-hmm. And we think it is possible. But it has to be anchored on a national vision that we all are enamored with.
Absolutely.
And that, to me, is what will drive us into that scenario. Yeah. We may not have achieved it, but we would have set a good pathway that we can, all of us, one day bequeath a good legacy for all of our children.
Yeah. Nkile, the last scenario is a floundering false dawn. How are you rating the probability or the risk of us actually going down that route, the route of scenario three?
In fact, if we don't engage, if we don't participate, and we're likely to end up in scenario number three. And so that is possible, like all scenarios. However, what is encouraging, I think, falling back against scenario two, is that really for us to get to that level, it means that the efforts that you've seen among South Africans, particularly in the past 6 months since December, if those efforts are harnessed, if the vision of 2030 through the National Development Plan, mm-hmm. And really that commitment that we're calling South Africans through this discussion, that let's have a conversation. Let's do that. So that scenario for me is a real worst scenario. And I wouldn't even think and push it there because the platform that you set it in this ingramity is to get you talking, engaged, yeah. So that you don't get up in that, don't get that scenario three.
Very quickly, if scenario two is the one we're targeting, does NHI fall in step with that?
It's very, very important. NHI, if it comes in at an opportune time, because what's saying to us, ask the elite, with private health care, that in a society that we have to get back to the basic and say, you know what, our constitution promises so much. What can I do as an elite to extend my responsibility so that we build together social cohesion and work together for a better South Africa that our constitution preamble expects us to?
Well, let's leave it there, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having joined me in studio this evening.